What difference does it make what we believe about Jesus? What difference? Hands up, for example, if you think Jesus is a human being shot through with glory who incarnated the spirit of the living God. What about hands up if you think Jesus was a rabbi, a lovely man, a teacher, a radical, a rat bag, but not divine? Okay, third one, hands up if you think Jesus was and is God, and as the third person of the Trinity was and is, according to traditional understandings, completely all-knowing and completely all-powerful. As many of you know, 2 weeks ago I went on a walk, a long, long walk, a walk that was almost the length of Gaza. I did this with a motley crew of other Christians, starting in the deep dark at 3:50 a.m. at Mernda Railway Station and finishing up at St. Paul's Cathedral for the Ash Wednesday service at 6 p.m. Some people asked me, why bother? I mean, seriously, why would you bother walking? What difference can that possibly make? I have shared with some of you before the story of William Cooper, Yorta Yorta elder, warrior, activist, who walked with a group of Australian First Nations to the German consulate in 1938 in Nam to protest against the waves of violence being committed against the Jewish people by the Nazi regime. No one really paid any attention at the time, but his actions have long been seen as a rare act of public solidarity in a time when most people were really just not paying attention. Acts of solidarity matter. And so we walked. He called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, if any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. The first part of the walk was in the dark. We were following a bike path past ancient red river gums who had taken root hundreds of years ago when, once upon a time, a river had flowed. This was sacred country. There were bats in the sky and mopoke owls hiding in the branches, and we walked fast. It was cold. There was only a few of us and we knew we had many miles to go before we rested. Let's listen again to the weight of the words which we heard in today's Mark and Gospel: suffering, killed, rebuked, rejected, Satan, cross, lose your life for my sake. Can you? Will you? What on earth does this all mean? Theologian Joanna Dewey writes of how Christians have often interpreted Mark 8:34 as a call to sacrifice self, to be subservient and to endure suffering as the demand of Christian discipleship. Was it a sacrifice to get up at 3:20 a.m. and walk 40 kilometres with over 200 others across a summertime day? Not really. Is it a sacrifice to give your life over to seeking justice in all you do for all those who cannot seek it for themselves? It can be. I mean, it's certainly not for me from my place of middle-class white woman privilege. But for many others, yeah. Yeah, indeed, it is. Activists lose their lives across the world all the time. In forests, in cities, in Gaza, good people are losing their lives because of love every single day. Dewey believes that often this passage has been read as an invitation into the glorification of suffering and as an encouragement to become a victim. One is to deny oneself, sacrifice oneself, wipe out any sense of self, and to embrace the cross. On the basis of this verse, many Christians, especially women, throughout the ages have embraced or endured suffering that could perhaps maybe have been alleviated if they had believed that this suffering was not what Christ had desired for them, and had been taught instead to rise up, to rally, to resist, to rebel. Some would argue that we are, of course, fundamentally misreading not just Mark, but the gospel as a whole if we choose to understand this passage as some sort of exhortation to suffering. Christ is not wishing pain upon us in order to make some kind of weird point. No, the whole point of Jesus' incarnation, his ministry, his love is that there is meaning and there is purpose and there is hope, and that he has come to bring wholeness and life, yea, life in abundance. not suffering, not death. As the writers of pulpit fiction reflect, this passage begins a new phase in Mark. I mean, up until now, things were going, you know, relatively smoothly. There were miracles, there were healings, a couple of parties, some feedings. But from here on in, things take a dramatic turn. After Transfiguration, we get conflict, we get arguments, and Jesus predicts his death not once, but twice. By his own words, the story from here, it's leading to the cross. His words open up some big questions like, well, I mean, how much did Jesus know about what was going to happen next? And was it Jesus' mission to die? And depending on your theology and also which gospel you're reading, Mark or John, you will probably answer these questions in one or two ways. For those who come from a high Christology, or in other words, for those who believe that Jesus was God, is God, they might say that Jesus knew from the start exactly what was happening and that death on the cross was his mission from day one. For those with a low Christology, Jesus knew that the things he were teaching were not going to be tolerated by the powers that be. He knew, even provoked conflict that led to his death. But the teaching and the community he built was the mission, not the dying. The Mark in Christ invites us to become disciples, and yes, it warns us that discipleship is not an easy path. But at no point in the Markan Gospel do we get a sense that Christ has come to do anything other than alleviate suffering and empower others to do the same. What difference does it make what we believe about Jesus? There were many moments on the walk where, instead of the overwhelming despair that most of us have been feeling as this war has unfolded in the Middle East, I felt a tiny bit of hope. I felt like I was part of something that was bigger than myself, and where I knew deeply and mystically that Jesus was walking with us. We stopped at sacred sites of worship along the way, one of those being in front of the Palestinian Christian Church, where a young Palestinian Christian woman spoke of her family and of Jesus and of the Garden of Gethsemane, and how there are only around 500 Christians left in Palestine, but that those who are there are part of a lineage going right back to Jesus. And we stopped at the Albanian mosque in Carlton, where we were welcomed by the current imam and by one of the women whose father had been the very first imam in this place of worship many years ago. As we entered, the imam at one end and the dusty Christian pilgrims at the other, and a vast blue carpet before us all, there was sort of a moment of silent, awkward stumbling. But then the woman and I and then others stepped forward to greet each other. We crossed the divide and we held each other in an embrace, and we both began to cry. This woman had prepared a feast. My table overflows, and after prayers we were led into a room covered in hospitality. Later in the exhibition gardens, a Jewish woman courageously spoke to us about how some Christians believe that Christianity, well, it died in the concentration camps of World War II, and of how some Jewish folk are now asking if Judaism is going to die in Gaza. What difference does it make what we believe about Jesus? There are Zionist Christians around the world who are celebrating the destruction in the Middle East because they see it as the beginning of the final rapture, the one that will see the apocalyptic return of Christ. There are Christians in Palestine who see God being born in the rubble. And there are Christians in over 115 countries who are taking up their cross and walking the length of Gaza over the month of Lent because they believe that this is what Jesus would do. We must take up our crosses. We must lobby our leaders, and we must stop exporting weapons from Australia to Israel. And we must never stop witnessing, even though it hurts like hell.